White Noise by Don DeLillo. This book is read by Michael Pritchard. Part 1. Waves and Radiation. Chapter 1. The station wagons arrived at noon, a long shining line that coursed through the west campus. In single file, they eased around the orange I-beam sculpture and moved toward the dormitories. The roofs of the station wagons were loaded down with carefully secured suitcases full of light and heavy clothing, with boxes of blankets, boots and shoes, stationery and books, sheets, pillows, quilts, with rolled-up rugs and sleeping bags, with bicycles, skis, rucksacks, English and Western saddles, inflated rafts. As cars slowed to a crawl and stopped, students sprang out and raced to the rear doors to begin removing the objects inside. The stereo sets, radios, personal computers, small refrigerators and table ranges, the cartons of phonograph records and cassettes, the hair dryers and styling irons, the tennis rackets, soccer balls, hockey and lacrosse sticks, bows and arrows, the controlled substances, the birth control pills and devices, the junk food still in shopping bags, onion and garlic chips, nacho thins, peanut cream patties, waffalos and kabooms, fruit chews and toffee popcorn, the dum-dum pops, the mystic mints. I've witnessed this spectacle every September for 21 years. It is a brilliant event, invariably. The students greet each other with comic cries and gestures of sudden collapse. Their summer has been bloated with criminal pleasures, as always. The parents stand sun-dazed near their automobiles, seeing images of themselves in every direction. The conscientious suntans, the well-made faces and wry looks. They feel a sense of renewal, of communal recognition. The women crisp and alert, in diet trim, knowing people's names. Their husbands content to measure out the time, distant but ungrudging, accomplished in parenthood. Something about them suggesting massive insurance coverage. This assembly of station wagons, as much as anything they might do in the course of the year, more than formal liturgies or laws, tells the parents they are a collection of the like-minded and the spiritually akin, a people, a nation. I left my office and walked down the hill and into town. There are houses in town with turrets and two-story porches where people sit in the shade of ancient maples. There are Greek Revival and Gothic churches. There is an insane asylum with an elongated portico, ornamented dormers, and a steeply pitched roof topped by a pineapple finial. Babette and I, and our children, by previous marriages, live at the end of a quiet street in what was once a wooded area with deep ravines. There is an expressway beyond the backyard now, well below us. And at night, as we settle into our brass bed, the sparse traffic washes past, a remote and steady murmur around our sleep, as of dead souls babbling at the edge of a dream. I am chairman of the Department of Hitler Studies at the College on the Hill. I invented Hitler Studies in North America in March of 1968. It was a cold, bright day with intermittent winds out of the east. When I suggested to the Chancellor that we might build a whole department around Hitler's life and work, he was quick to see the possibilities. It was an immediate and electrifying success. The Chancellor went on to serve as advisor to Nixon, Ford, and Carter before his death on a ski lift in Austria.